Yes, good afternoon on this lovely Thursday evening. This is your weekly legal talk show, Law in Action, with me, Nafimane Halwendo. And of course, this is our weekly show where we talk about and discuss various burning legal issues of importance to the country, the region, SADC, Africa at large, and the world at large. So last week we had what we termed the free legal advice session. And on popular demand, I've decided that we're going to have another free legal advice session. So for any of you listeners who are out there, who have a burning legal issue, an issue perhaps that you want us to discuss and dissect, or even just a personal issue that you'd want to get legal advice on, you are free to call into Legal FM and then we'll see how best we can assist you. Before I go into that and before we start receiving calls, there's something very interesting that I actually realized upon research this week. And that is that there are various laws in the country, but only one type of law is made by consensus of the people via parliament. And that is statutory provisions. So we all know the common law adage that there is no taxation without representation, which means that government essentially cannot impose tax on people without having had the mandate from parliament. Now, what is interesting is that we know parliament is the body that is elected or that is appointed in terms of the constitution to enact and pass laws in the country. But as we know, there are other laws such as the common law, such as customary law, that is not passed by virtue of any parliamentary decree. So it was interesting because when I was reading upon common law, a lot of people, you hear government or even in court judgments, people saying, well, that law is according to our common law. Common law is essentially judge-made law. It's a law that is developed over time by the courts, where the courts say, for instance, we feel the law on how documents should be admitted as evidence in our courts should be guided by this and that principle. And essentially, that becomes a law. But more importantly, from an African perspective, is the fact that customary law, in essence, is also a law that does not come from parliament. We don't have parliamentary sessions in our villages. Traditionally speaking, we've never had sessions where people sit upon elected individuals' decisions and say, we adopt these elected individuals' decision, and that becomes the law. For many of us who know and have studied, customary law is a law by practice, and it's a law then that is passed down from generation to generation. Now, in terms of African customary law, that law has not been written, meaning it's been word of mouth. It's orally passed down from one generation to another. And the reason I bring this issue up is that it then becomes imminent that citizens, as we live on a daily basis, we in fact have the power to change the laws with our practices on a daily basis. Of course, there are certain laws, such as banking laws, which have to be changed via parliamentary sessions, via parliamentary discussions. But for instance, if you look at the Rukwangali traditions on marriage, the Ovakwanyama tradition on marriage, if you look at the Ovaherero tradition on marriage, these are customary laws that are recognized in the country, but they need not go through such an official process. Meaning, if you as an individual decide, from my village, in terms of wedding practices, I am not going to do A, B, C, and D, I'm going to do X. You, in fact, have the power to change laws, of course, not from a parliamentary perspective, but from a customary law perspective. I'm being informed that we have to go on a short commercial break. Of course, it's an automatic commercial break. We will be back in just a few seconds.
Kukuruga na yowamba, kukuningisa ozere, nukusespika na mpito domgara mokagura mkisigemeke. Ramangako, uwera o HIV. Ayo, kukupopera, tani kuiruga na maokoko. Tokora sigara, ninka wa kukuruga na yowamba. Mokutura mwe hundiro liye yowamba zu maokoko, di mwagwana kuma pukuru gomanzi. Tumako WhatsApp kwa numero zoe utantandatu zime, ntatwe utantane, mbali ntambali, mbali ntane. Ndi dingura kwa Facebook, kwa VMMC Namibia.
Yes, Lloyd.
Speak your mind. while respecting the opinions of others.
But how can you say Namibia was brought on a silver platter when so many people were massacred?
No, that's not what I mean. Mm-hmm. I mean on the silver platter
in terms of the infrastructure.
Of the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, there were schools, there were roads, there were...
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
To grab that victory against Ivory Coast will be a big one for us. It will be the first...
For social position to raise a child. What does that mean? Baby dumping.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
The commander say hold fire, they hold fire. When the commander says fire, they fire. You know, they are trained to kill. We are trained to arrest people and bring them before court.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
That's why some of us wear unbranded clothes. Because it's about selling their product.
So talk on Eagle FM. Eagle FM, the eye.
Yes, Law in Action, you are back. We are back on air with Mina Fimane Halwendo. Now, as I was indicating, the power to change laws is very much in the citizenry as it is in the hands of parliament. Now, I've seen a concern on social media regarding African weddings, and more specifically weddings north of the red line, where they feel that a lot of time is spent, one, on unnecessary expenses, and two, on unnecessary customs that not only waste time because they are not pragmatic anymore in the modern day, but also on customs that waste money in the sense that groomsmen and women need to do so many things in terms of traditional custom. Some things are termed taboo, and by the time that guests are given an opportunity to enjoy the time, their wedding and time with the groomsmen, essentially, they only get to enjoy about 1 hour or 2 hours, and the wedding has gone to costs of 300,000 or 400,000. Now, the reason I spoke about each individual's ability to change the law is because customary law is not written on a big tree somewhere. The customary laws of Namibia, the customary laws of South Africa, the customary laws of Zimbabwe, the customary laws in Africa are not codified, which means they are not written down in a book. And more importantly, customary laws are not created through a system such as parliament. Now, what does that mean? That means that you and your cousins, me and my family members, we live and change customary laws on a daily. So if there's something that you do not find suitable or pragmatic in the current dispensation, it can be weddings, it can be relating to acquisition of property, inheritance, you in fact have the power to change those laws by actions. You can start a tradition and say, we are going to get married on a Sunday in the presence of 5 or 10 elders. The next weekend, we will then have a full wedding ceremony. We don't have to come from church on the same day. Our ceremony will start from start to finish on the same day. And it will, for instance, be at a specific place where the costs are limited. The elders, if there are rituals to be performed, will have to be performed on a specific day. So we, in essence, have the power to dictate and change the laws in Namibia insofar as our customary practices are concerned. But I think the difficulty is that there is perhaps a lack of understanding insofar as customary laws are concerned, where we are waiting for perhaps parliament to change the law, or where we are waiting for a great wizard wise in traditional knowledge to inform us that the time is now for us to change certain laws. But if we look at legal principles, you will realize that customary laws are laws that evolve through practice. And so essentially, we should not wait for an act of parliament. What we should do, especially in the black communities, is discuss some of these laws and say, is it really necessary that immediately when someone in the family dies, this and that should happen? Is it a must? Is it necessary for only one lineage to inherit? Is it a must? So these discussions need to happen, because only from these discussions can we change a specific law in terms of practice. Because once you, for instance, realize that the practice does not make sense in the current dispensation, you will then see that many people will be more inclined to changing the way they celebrate weddings, the way they deal with inheritance. I see we have a caller on the line. Kola, you're alive?
He's not money.
Kola, you're alive?
He's not money.
Yes.
How is the evening?
Very well. How are you, sir?
Good.
Who am I speaking to?
Mulemba from Walvis Bay.
Mr. Mulemba?
Yebo.
I think you are becoming a regular on the show now.
Yeah. Man, I just want to ask, man. You see?
Yes.
If, for example, if a person was elected as a councillor.
If a person was elected as a councillor?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, a local authority councillor.
Mm-hmm.
And you are sworn in at the court.
Mm-hmm.
Then after you sworn in, you are the chairperson and mayor.
Uh-huh.
And later a political party come and make you a deputy president.
Deputy president of the party?
Yes.
Yes.
How does that affect? Because to me, I feel it affects the job of that specific person. Because remember when you took an oath in the court of law?
Yes.
You remove all your political attire because now you are going to serve the people.
Yes.
But how does after you were sworn in the court of law, you remove all your political attire and you are a chairperson for that matter.
Yes.
You are a mayor, head of all the councillor, and your political party went to the back and appointed you as a vice president of the political party.
Yes.
Cannot that be able to be challenged? Because to me, I feel it's not fair.
Well, I think I need to answer your question from two perspectives.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, the first is that political appointees, there's a difference between your appointment in terms of, for instance, the Local Authorities Act.
Yes.
And your political leadership in the party.
Yes.
Now, the moment you are appointed, you can be appointed to National Council, you can be appointed to Parliament, you can be appointed to the local authorities.
Yes.
There are judgments, in fact, a recent judgment of the Constitutional Court of South Africa in the secret ballot case indicates that on constitutional principles, your appointment leaves you with your bodily conscience, meaning you don't make decisions based on your political affiliation.
Yes.
You make decisions based on your personal conscience. That's the first thing that leaders need to understand when they're appointed to political office.
Yes.
Yeah, but of course, we understand you come from a political party, so there might be a party agenda.
Yeah.
Now, if you are a public official and you understand that your appointment to a specific body, it's not just limited to the Local Authorities Act, as I've indicated. It goes even to the highest lawmaking body in the country.
Yes.
If you are appointed to Parliament by SWAPO, it doesn't mean you must go and pass laws that benefit SWAPO. Because remember, the Constitution requires every individual public official, that is one individual, and or public body to abide by the Constitution.
Yes.
So it can be 100 SWAPO members in Parliament,
and
they want to pass a specific law. If that law... In terms of your conscience, is going against the Constitution, you can decide against it. Now, coming to your second question, it then follows that even if you are appointed as a mayor of a local authority or a chairperson of a management committee, if the party appoints you as the deputy president or even as the president of the party, it has no bearing on your responsibilities and your duties in terms of the Local Authorities Act. Because in terms of those responsibilities, you must bring an independent and impartial conscience to bear. The only issue would be is if your new appointment in terms of your political party structure makes it physically impossible or emotionally impossible for you to carry out your duties, either as a mayor or as a councillor, then there we are talking about a conflict of interest, and the due thing that you should do is resign. Either, of course, it will be difficult to resign from the party because you are appointed on the party ticket. But I don't think there is anything fair. In fact, I would argue that it would be unfair or unconstitutional for your party, for instance, to demote you because you are given extra responsibilities. What is important is whether you can handle being a mayor and being the leader of your party.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
The last thing, Nazmane, that I want to say, look, what I noticed is that the law of Namibia is, it's good on paper.
Yes.
But they lack enforcement, facilitation, and compliance.
In what sector, in what sense is that?
If in just look, if you check, for example, in business wise, look, if you check like the immigration law, like the one that I was telling you last time, the Immigration Act of 1993, Act Number 5, Section 27,
yes.
It says foreigner are prohibited to enter the country with the purpose of entering.
With the purpose of?
Yeah, foreigner are prohibited to enter the country with the purpose of entering.
Okay.
To pursue a business, taking on any profession or occupation.
What section is that, sir?
It's the Immigration Act of 1993, Act Number 5, Section 27.
Okay.
Yeah. But if you check in terms of the Namibian law, we just have people that are entered. Even if you check in the Namibian, if, even if the the what the how do you call this guy? The state advocate.
Yeah.
Right? The state advocate that was representing the government on the
on many cases. Yes.
Yes, especially, let me say, just be specific, because me, I check these things almost on the intellectual side. You see, the state advocate that was representing the state on the case of Dimbuken Naroma and Amshelelo, you see, you are a foreigner. Now, ask yourself, when you were in a Chinatown, you were protesting against this foreigner, but now the person that's representing the state to make sure that those guys are locked up is also a foreigner. Now, how can you get merit on that case? Because he will say, if I leave this guy, today they are fighting against the Chinese. Tomorrow they will fight against it, me. But if you check our immigration law, it clearly states that foreigners are prohibited. You understand?
Yeah, I think I need to clarify this while you are still on air, sir. Because I think you've raised this point once and we didn't clarify it properly.
Yes.
The Immigration Act and the section that you are quoting, Section 27, does not prohibit foreign nationals to be employed in Namibia in totality.
Yes.
What it says is that it prohibits foreign nationals to be employed in Namibia without permits. That is, without work permits.
Yes.
It constitutes a board that has to decide on who is to be issued permits, work permits, and who is not to be issued work permits.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think we need to clarify that the law in the country does not prohibit foreigners, because that would then mean, for instance, that the prosecutor general is in contravention of immigration laws when she employs state advocates, which is not the case. So the first point is that the law makes provision for foreign nationals to be employed in the country. What it does is it limits what foreign nationals can do in the country, which means that if, for instance, there are special characters, I mean, there are special positions that require specific skills that Namibians already have, there's no need to get foreign nationals. That's what the law says. Now, coming back to your second point on the advocates that were being used by the prosecutor general, I'm just seeing here that we have 6 seconds. We are going on an automatic break. If you can just stay on the line, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
The International University of Management, IUM, with the Umbo no number no wish we faguja, Omanjirongo or Durataya Academic Year 2023, Okapatruka, Enderinapa if you record a paparoe, more education, Ukarolongi Fukoda, Ida Ufe or Health and Social Science, Oshoma Ifano, Information and Communication Technology, or Strategic Management and Leadership, na Tai Monica, no Tourism, Osho Hospitality and Event Management, Business Administration, Ekuterera, Environmental Studies and Postgraduate Studies, at Shota Di Monica. Wirede, Oto Monica ko website, www.ium.edu.na. Ile utadere po embiro da IUM, tikulipo pepi, Mo venduka, mongu renguru, mongu ediva, no mompae, utadi Monica. Wirede tu hangi kongo di ya venduka, 061, ongo di, ne, natunatu, ome wavedi hamano, inda komesho, kufe tokorori rimonjira, toiko mwona kui wainerao, pamwena IUM.
Nafimane Halwendo, Legal Practitioners, is a Namibian law firm based in Namibia, Vinduk. Our services are criminal litigations, divorce proceedings, labor matters, disciplinary hearings, drafting of commercial contracts and mining applications and facilitations, human rights violations, company registration, motor vehicle accidents, and debt collection. Find us at number 1 Devert Street, Vinduk North, or call us today on 081-675-4905. That is 081-675-4905. Nafimane Halwendo Legal Practitioners, here to serve you.
Yes, sir, are you still online?
Yes.
Yes, so there are two primary points. The first one is that the law, our immigration laws, do make provision for foreign nationals to be employed in the country, and whether or not someone should be employed in the country is the duty of the immigration board. Now, that comes to the second point. I think you do make a valid point there where you say, should these nationals be employed in certain sectors? And I remember 2 weeks ago, I discussed that issue, which was discussed in the Constitutional Court of South Africa, saying that only nationals of South Africa and foreign nationals who have permanent residency may be admitted as practicing legal practitioners of South Africa. And the reasoning was really along the lines, I think I remember you also gave quite pertinent views and very important views, where you said it makes sense that certain jobs should be preserved for locals. And only where there is a lacuna in a skill set that only a foreign national can fill, then ordinarily, of course, it makes sense that you'd have a foreign national feel that. I do hear what you are saying in terms of the Prosecutor General's office. In fact, I used to work at the Prosecutor General's office back in my time. So I know that there are a lot of foreign nationals there. And we do have a question of, in fact, local nationals who are unemployed and who have legal qualifications, but they cannot find work. So that is a valid point that you are making.
Yes, especially not man. If you check, look, to me, I'm saying we must maybe legal practitioner like you must maybe try to come up with a draft to enact a new law to say. So if foreigners are employed in Namibia, they must have certain contract, because look, we cannot be a country like Namibia, but we don't have a vision. We have a vision. Remember from 1990 up to today, you are employing foreigners. Teachers, whatever. You, for example, you have now 50,000. No. Not 50% of the Namibian population of young people are in the street. As supposed to be teachers.
Yes.
But you still have people, teacher coming from Zimbabwe to come and employ here and work in private school. You understand?
Yes.
So why can't we have specific law that targets? Okay, we will make sure by this in 2030. Look, if this foreigner come here work. Okay, it's fine, but after that period of 10 years, then we integrate our own people, they transfer their skill, and we give them a golden handshake. So, because these are the people, for example, when you give foreign nationals position of power, it's a problem. The people, they're going to punish you, because remember, this is your country. Yes. To them, their country is somewhere. And remember, any law that will make you in your country, that law will always work against you. That's why we are up to here in Namibia today, and we call ourselves, every time you have an investor is coming from abroad. The investor come here, they open a mine, they buy their own truck, everything.
Now,
we are here, we are poor, we are fighting each other and nothing. We are saying we have resources, but we have nothing.
No, I hear you.
Yeah, our people are not given such opportunity and say, we must have a flame pen like, and in this term period, we make sure in this company, in this law firm of Nazmane, there are 10 German or 10 Italian. Yeah. We make sure by 2030, those 10 German are replaced by Namibian. Thank you, Nazmane.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Yes, those are the views and suggestions from Walvis Bay. Essentially that we should prioritize local employment, and where there is a skill deficit and that skill deficit is filled by people who are not Namibian nationals, we should have a realistic plan on when that contract should end and when we are going to ensure that it's filled by someone who is Namibian. We have another caller on the line. Law in Action, caller, you're live.
Law in Action, Nafimani, how are you?
I'm very well.
That's great. So, yes,
this is Uncle Buana.
Yes, this is Uncle Buana.
Yes, Uncle Buana.
Yes, the issue pertaining to... maybe before I get into the what I want to inquire,
yes,
is the leaders.
Yes.
Are leaders born or made?
Mm-hmm.
Because the reason why I'm asking that is because you just mentioned that, yes, should we just have people who are, for example, from the specific lineage or whatever,
yes,
who should become maybe let's say chief or leaders in their community,
mm-hmm,
or those ones maybe in terms of heritage.
Yes.
Because those, say for example, those maybe you are from this Kwanambwas or wherever, and then you should just then be the ones to be ruling, yes, over the community.
Yes.
Even if you do not possess the required qualities of you being there.
Yes.
So now, because see, that has been a customary practice.
Yes.
And since it has been a customary practice, it has some kind of an element of discriminatory kind of a way,
yes,
because you are actually excluding others.
Well, what you are talking about is the royal cultural,
yeah,
practice.
Yeah, the royal family.
Yeah, the royal family practice.
That kind of practice.
Yes, on accession to leadership.
Exactly.
Yes.
So if we are saying that, yes, maybe those who are born,
yes,
in that lineage or whatever you call it,
yes,
should be the only one to rule,
yes,
is that not a discriminatory practice? So,
yes,
of course, the other one is...
What would you propose, Uncle Buana?
I'm just saying that anybody who is can be eligible to rule, and has that those qualities that are required,
yes,
for that person to be on that throne,
yes,
then that person can be given that opportunity,
yes,
and not necessarily, yeah, you are a born leader.
I think that's a beautiful point, Uncle Buana, because as I was indicating from the onset, customary, mm-hmm, laws, unlike parliamentary laws, don't have to go through a special process. It can be adopted,
yeah,
by virtue of practice. So I think,
yeah,
if that then is your proposition,
mm,
it would be best for us to talk to traditional leaders, talk to traditional authorities, and also talk to each other in our traditional communities and find out what is the best way to ascertain who has what personality leadership traits that can then, yeah, make them eligible for leadership.
Thank you. The last one briefly is on the issue of the proclamation.
Which proclamation?
So I think I'm trying to, I did not get the one that the young man was talking about, this Dimbrukwen was talking about, but there is one on the municipal bylaw, that proclamation, I don't know whether it's 1957.
What does the proclamation say?
Yeah, the one that says the one that has to do with informal traders, and I,
yes,
think I can also couple it with the one for the marriage, in community of property, the one on the other side, on the other side of the red line. I think it, or maybe I'm confusing them, could be the one on the 1957, one of them there.
Okay, what is your commentary on the proclamation?
So that the proclamation that was put in there, especially the one for municipal bylaw, the one that prevents or prohibits, for example, the street vendors, those hawkers and other things, you know, like those people who are selling along the Independence Avenue.
No, I understand.
So, yeah, so those ones, that particular proclamation, it was actually put in there by the apartheid system.
Yes.
And the reason was actually to segregate our people to the backgrounds. And I think that has the same effect with what Dimbrukweni was talking about. And like you were saying,
if it were up to you, Uncle Buana, would you allow just anyone to trade anyway? What is the proposition?
There must be some kind of regulation.
Okay.
That regulation shouldn't just be affecting the some segment of the society, of the population.
But if there's a regulation that says this is the process you need to follow if you want to set up a shop there, as we see, even in town, there are vendors who are allowed to set up shop because I'm assuming they've gone through the process. Ordinarily, there should be also a regulation then prohibiting illegal or unlawful vendors. Not so.
Yeah, no. Yeah, there are those who might be legally, maybe they might have acquired some document to sell there, for example.
Yes.
And even if they don't acquire, might not have acquired those documents.
Yes.
Isn't it because of the segregation kind of a section of a law, a policy that is there? Because I know, if you look at, for example, I'm just saying, I'm not advocating for chaotic.
Yeah, I want to understand your point, Uncle Buana, because I want us to address specific points.
Okay.
Yeah, coherently.
Yeah, okay.
So your point on the vendors, the unlawful vendors is, are you saying we should have a carte blanche where anyone can just walk up with their umbrella and start setting up shop, or what are we saying?
No, not the legal ones. I mean, the unauthorized ones.
Yes.
But they could be those vendors. Because, you know, when you look at the informal sectors of the economy, most of those policies, I don't think there are really those vendors who are operating within the informal economic sectors that are given those permits to sell there. I doubt.
So let's assume that is the position. In the informal sectors, vendors are selling without permits. What is your proposition on vendors? Are you saying there should be a process? There should not be a process? Should the process be relaxed? Should there be easier access to education and information on how to apply to be a vendor? Because
I think
the reason I'm asking, Uncle Buana, is that, of course, you said you are not promoting lawlessness and chaos. But at the same time, when we are talking about a law, a provision of law that makes it unlawful for you to do something, if you want to do away with that law, you must show that the law is irrational, for instance, that the discrimination is irrational, that it doesn't make sense. So,
yeah, but
I'm saying that it makes sense in terms of order and a proper administration of, for instance, even just transport within the city CBD.
I'm coming, honey.
Within the city CBD, you must have approved vendors who are selling approved products, and at least they have a basic understanding of what they should do. I see that there's a automatic commercial break.
Paratus Mobile LTE. Everything you want, whenever you want it. Start uploading, downloading, liking, and sharing all your experiences with the world. Starting from 345 Namibian dollars per month, excluding VAT for postpaid. Get online with high-speed internet the way you want it. Visit paratus.africa/NA for more information. Always prepare.
Yes, Law in Action, we are back on air. Just to answer shortly the issue that was raised by Uncle Buana with regards to illegal vendors, I think what's important to realize is that as much as most old laws may be a bit archaic, we have to come to terms with the reality, which is that most of these laws serve a purpose. And if we want to do away with those laws, we must indicate that the law is so irrational to a point where it's in fact to the disadvantage of Namibia if the law remains on our statute books. And when we talk about things like illegal occupation of land or illegal vending and the likes, we must come with something counter to what the law currently offers. So if you are saying, for instance, well, illegal occupation of land, for instance, is a bad law, what is the law that you are proposing? Are you proposing that anyone can come and occupy land? And we have to remember that you might be earmarking the absence of a law for your own indigenous people and saying, if you scrap that law, if you do not make it illegal for people to grab land, that means that my people will be emancipated and they can come from the north or from the south and they'll be able to get land and they'll not be harassed by the police because there's nothing illegal about it. But you then remember that you also give leeway for those who are more powerful than your people from the villages, meaning a Russian oil mogul could come and you'll find tomorrow he has set up a construction shop or he has fenced off a large area of a farmland in Windhoek. Or even one of your local rich, affluent people could do that. And so in the same vein, when you are, for instance, discussing laws on illegal vending and saying our people are suffering, if they try to set up a shop alongside Venil or somewhere, they get arrested and we then say we call them illegal vendors because there is an act that prohibits them to vend without a specific license, that act is discriminatory. We should then take the discussion further and say, well, what is it that you propose? Are you proposing that the law should be scrapped? It should not be illegal? Anyone can start selling anything anywhere? You are living in your neighborhood, wherever it is. Perhaps it's a very well-mannered and very well-structured neighborhood. And tomorrow you wake up, next to each house, someone is selling something that makes your life or brings a nuisance to your life. So we must then realize that some of these laws, as discriminatory as they may appear, serve an actual purpose. And then the moment you realize that and you contrast it with the struggle of the people, you then realize that the solution lies elsewhere. The solution, for instance, lies in concepts such as good corporate governance, that people should have access to information. I've recently been keeping tabs on the Access to Information Bill, which is about to be passed. I'm not sure if it's passed, but lastly, it was in draft mode and it was to be passed as a law in Namibia, which makes it peremptory, mandatory, in fact, for each Namibian person to get access to public information. So these are some of the key guidelines on how to make sure that these laws do not discriminate or do not negatively affect our people. I do not agree that with the proposition that every law that was made before the independence of Namibia is discriminatory to an extent that the law should be scrapped away, because some of those laws deal with issues that are not per se rooted in color, but or rooted in race, as we've known apartheid policies to be predominantly rooted in race and race segregation. But some of these laws are there for the purpose of maintaining law and order, and if you scrap them away without an alternative, it is more likely to lead to chaos. We have another caller on the line. Caller, okay. Law in action. Caller, you're live.
Yes, Nafimani.
Yes, good afternoon.
How are you?
Very well. Yes. How are you?
I think it is evening now. Good evening.
Yes, good evening. Where are we speaking to?
To Fanuel.
Fanuel, where are you calling us from?
I'm in Windhoek.
Okay. Fanuel, talk to us.
Yeah, to correct Uncle Buana, what Dingugen was discussing has nothing to do with hookers or vendors.
Yes.
But he was talking about the Squatting Proclamation Act.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, yeah, it was the Squatting Proclamation Act.
Yes.
I think that is what he was dealing with.
Okay.
And then for me, it's just, the what you were discussing now.
Yes.
Regarding laws, especially now the Constitution says whatever law was in existence at the time of independence,
yes,
should remain in force,
yes,
until such a time that it is repealed.
Yes.
But we have things like the law reform.
Yes.
Committee or in Namibia.
Yes.
Especially those laws that are discriminatory and that are segregating to some extent, yes, or to the full extent sometimes.
Yes.
Why would somebody, it should be that it's somebody that has to challenge that law. Why? What is the law reform doing? Is it their duty not to review laws?
Yes, it is.
But why don't they review laws on their own, just on their own initiative, without anybody going to court to challenge a law?
I think, in fairness, can you hear me, sir?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, I think in fairness to the Law Reform Commission, I don't think it's a situation where they are not reviewing any laws. In fact, they are reviewing a lot of laws. Ever since their inception, I think they, on their website, there is an indication of how many laws have been changed as a result of the Law Reform Commission. So they are doing something. As to whether they are doing enough is a factual question. Now, in terms of why should people always go to fact, I think the honest answer is a lack of political will, because as I've indicated, some of these laws have to be passed in parliament. Or, for instance, where they are reviewed, they still have to be adopted in parliament.
Yes.
Now, you'll know that parliament has an unwillingness to adopt certain laws. For instance, the question of abortion has been on the books for a long time. The question of why we do not have title deed to communal land has been on the books for a long time. So some of these issues lack a political will and perhaps an in-depth understanding of what the law reform will bring in the country. And that is essentially where the courts comes in, because what the courts do is they do an analysis and they do an assessment, which is, I think, to be quite honest, a bit easier as opposed to that which is done by parliament, because the questions the court have to determine when they validate or invalidate a law is, one, whether that law infringes one of the fundamental rights in the Constitution, and two, whether that infringement is justifiable. So if a court considers a law and they find out this law is a limitation on the right to or freedom of movement or the right to dignity, and they find that there's no reasonable explanation that can be accepted in a fully functioning society as to why the law should exist, then the court declares the law invalid.
Invalid.
Yeah. So that inquiry is easier than the inquiry that, or the process that parliament has to follow. Because remember, parliament cannot pass one statement laws. If they are going to invalidate a law, they need to provide a foundational benchmark which guides the relevant ministry, which guides public officials. And so that duty sometimes, I think, is just cumbersome to an extent that it's easier to just leave the law on the books and to play the card and say, well, if it's challenged in court, let whoever wants to challenge it in court, challenge it in court. If it's invalidated, then we'll deal with it then. But for now, we'll leave it on the books. I think that is really where we are as a country, that there's lack of political will to address certain issues, and there's limited understanding in terms of, if we take that law away, what are we going to replace it with?
To replace it with, yeah.
Yes, I think that's really the conundrum that we find ourselves in as a country, to say, there's difficulty. We know it's easy for me and you to say, well, we were discussing this on Eagle FM. I think this law is discriminatory. Do away with it. But doing away with it means that you need to follow a serious process.
Yeah, it's a process on its own.
Yeah, of enacting a new law, a full, properly well-researched law on what is going to happen. I want to give you an example. For instance, the Communal Land Act.
Yeah.
If you were to successfully convince parliament, the majority of parliament, to say people in the north should have title deeds.
Title deeds, yes.
Yes. Now, it's a very comprehensive act. What then happens is that, for instance, you'll find the majority of people, even under the Communal Land Act, They don't even have certification from the land boards.
From the land
people bodies. Are just given land by the traditional headman. You go to the headman, Mwineon Kunda, and you talk to him. He says, okay, my son, there you can start farming there, or you can set up your homestead. But they don't even follow the law to the letter. So there's also an absence of education. Now, imagine you want now to replace that system and you say you want to give people title deeds. Title deeds that can allow them to get loans from the bank and, use that as collateral. You really need to come up with a new proper concrete structure, and that should include education, and that should include administrative functionalities such as who is going to register, how will the registration process take place, storage of those title deeds. So it's not as easy as it is saying it on principle and, of course, comparing it to constitutional principle. I think the process that the Law Reform Commission has to follow is a one, it's a very serious process that we should not take for granted. But even if they do follow that process, I think there still is the second pillar, which is that the Law Reform Commission, in terms of our constitution, is not the body that is entrusted to pass laws. Those laws still have to go to parliament, and the politicians we have elected, they must still be convinced that the laws need to be reformed. And until a time when they are convinced, there's that good synergy between the Law Reform Commission and our politicians in parliament, it's going to be very difficult to have a quick change of some of these old archaic laws.
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Law in Action, that will most likely be our last caller. We only have 3 minutes left. I think today was a very productive session in the sense that we've touched on the question of old laws, and I know Uncle Bwana did not get time to ventilate his issues fully. I think we have 2 minutes. We'll take one last caller. Law in Action, you're live?
Yeah, let me just have a minute to conclude since I got. So what
it,
I was
it would
saying,
have to be a minute, Uncle Bwana. We only have 3 minutes left.
Since you said that, yes, there must be an alternative.
Yes.
The best alternative to replace that law, for example, that prohibits people to sell, so that you don't allow chaos and so the same law, because I know the same law that came into place that prohibits us, that gave advantage to those who are now there. Why can't we then use the same law? Because when, say for example, before...
We must use the same law that prohibits us. What are you saying, Dr.
Because I know we were moved from here, from Windhoek, for example, and this independent
Sorry, I think for us to be contextually on the same page, which law are you talking about specifically?
The proclamation, the municipal bylaw, that is also a proclamation. I think in 1957, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but the law that prohibits what?
The law that prohibits, more especially, the informal sellers, informal economic sectors.
Yes.
To sell in there, for example, in the street.
Yes.
Without causing chaotic.
Yes. Uncle Bwana, we are pressed for time. We only have 2 minutes. So what is the alternative?
The alternative is just, okay, maybe you now find an alternative. You find out that why is this one relegating these sellers, the informal sector who are selling there, to Katutura, for example. Because there, when you go to Katutura, informal settlement there, that law does not apply.
Uncle Bwana, I don't think that is correct with respect. Because the moment someone is removed, say, from Venil or Marua Mall, the city does not make an endorsement to say you can now go sell illegally in Katutura.
But they don't follow us there. But only when you come to town, that's the when they hand you.
Yes, I think then that's a different question. It's a question of political will and police will. And I see Uncle Bwana here that we have...
Are they not acting on those laws, the political, the politician?
But it's a valid question to ask, that why do they not follow the illegal vendors to Katutura?
Yeah.
We have a commercial break, automatic commercial break.
But we can follow it up next time.
So, jy het dit gedoen. Jy het jou laat besny.
Jep,
dit was baie dapper. Was dit nie vrek seer nie?
Dit was net so effens seer, maar dis die moeite werd om myself teen seksueel oordraagbare infeksies te beskerm. En dis soveel makliker om skoon te hou.
Wel, as jy dit so stel, dan moet ek dit dalk ook laat doen.
Bra, dis die regte ding om te doen. Man Up, kry 'n besnyding. Om 'n gratis besnyding te bespreek of om meer uit te vind, stuur 'n WhatsApp boodskap na 081-309-2729 of besoek ons Facebookblad by VMMC Namibia.
Yes, Law in Action, that has been our show for today. You will catch me again next week on Thursday from 6:30 to 7:30 from me, Nafimane Halwendo. Good evening.